You're talking about it. We're talking about it.
The midterm elections. Who will win? Who will not?
One question about the 2026 races is already answered.
It'll all be covered on News Radio 92.3.
Campaign 2026.
This is where the fun begins.
Every step, every day.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it.
On News Radio 92.3. Informative. Local. Dependable. Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
The basic premise of this is a camping and public speaking ordinance, and I want to speak to that. This ordinance is about maintaining safe and clean public areas, whether it be sidewalks, parks. It creates a local environment where we have an enforcement action as our police and as our city to help make sure that people are safe and secure.
That's the voice of Milton Chief of Police Jen Frank talking to the Milton City Council about the need to create a public ordinance, an ordinance for the city that implements the requirements of the state law that the cities and counties do not allow public camping and have a method of removing people who are camping in public areas because they're interfering with businesses or residences, which, you know, Escambia and Santa Rosa have kind of, I think Santa Rosa has done this. I have to think about it a little bit, you know, and go back and check. But, you know, certainly we've had this conversation in Escambia County and certainly in the city of Pensacola.
State law actually requires action. In 2024, Governor DeSantis and the state of Florida actually created a process that cities could be held accountable by business owners, by residents and people in the area for not addressing certain issues. And one of those issues in particular was homelessness and sleeping on public property. However, we actually do not have an enforcement mechanism for that. And what does that mean? That means that an individual could set up a tent or a camp on a public sidewalk, in the area of a park, outside of one of our businesses, and choose to live there, bring a lot of their property there. That also has the potential of bringing rats, other rodents, creating a blockage so that we're not able to use the property or the area for what it's intentionally designed for.
Yeah, people do not have a right to camp in public areas. They're not entitled to that. And by the way, I know some people, and you know, not that this is, I just, some people have this reaction, which is, well, you know, where are they supposed to go? Which I also have that at times, right? You know, people have to be able to live somewhere. And if they do not have a place that they own, you know, where are they supposed to be? And the part of the answer to that is, okay, but you're not entitled to occupy a public area. Because even though it is a public area and you're free to go through there or to use it, you know, to sit on a park bench, for example, it's not your park bench. It belongs to the public. It's not your tree. It's not your piece of sidewalk. And so you're not entitled to treat it as your residence, as your real estate, as your property, because it is shared by all of us. And you're allowed to use it, but only temporarily. And when you, for example, under the state law, if you camp there, you're now treating it like it's your place. And it's not your place. It's our place. And there's a distinction between that. In any case, what she's saying is there's a law about this. And if we don't act, we're vulnerable because we can get sued if we don't remove people, and we don't have the enforcement power to actually remove people right now.
I want to be clear. We recognize that this is a very difficult spot to try to navigate. As we try to work through this process, we intend to come at it with compassion and understanding that homelessness is a very difficult point in many people's lives. But we have to also balance that with the residents and with the homeowners and the business individuals in our community.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I really like Chief a lot. And one of the things that she's done is she's very public. She's does a lot of press and, you know, does a lot of releases, press conferences, all that kind of stuff. You know, I liked Chief before. You know, he was great. But I like her attitude and kind of the publicity of it even better. And I like that she's coming out and talking. And I like the compassion, frankly, which is common among our law enforcement. It's not unique to her. But, you know, the idea, I mean, I know, you know, like Chief Leiter and I, you know, who's the chief deputy at the Escambia County Sheriff's, we were in LEAP together and we did a project related to, you know, homelessness and panhandling. So, and I know where his heart is. I know where, you know, the sheriff's hearts are. I mean, everybody's concerned about this, okay? We have I think, a particularly sympathetic group of law enforcement leaders in this two-county area.
What this ordinance would specifically state is that, as state statute mandates, it's illegal to camp in a public area. It would allow us to address that. We would start by making sure that as officers, as our code enforcement, as our city employees, that we'd start with some compassion and some warning, some understanding what resources are available to help redirect you to those locations. After those warnings, we would move to a secondary element, which would say, you need to go ahead and pack up and you need to leave. This is not a place that you can set up for home and set up for encampment. And then if individuals chose to continue to ignore the resources available, to ignore their relocation efforts, to ignore the warning that you need to find some other spot to be, then an enforcement action would take place.
Yeah, and that's a very normal level of escalation, is inform, warn, and then enforce if you have to. And, you know, why is this an issue for them? We'll talk about that in just a second. PJ has traffic on the fives.
I-10 eastbound, looks like we have an object in the roadway right over the Escambia Bay Bridge, so just be aware of that. Also, US 90 appears to be at a standstill from the Simpson River to 3rd Avenue and Pace, and that is causing major backups on Woodbine Road. Not sure what's causing that, but we'll keep an eye on it. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. Back to the conversation that Milton Police Chief Jen Frank was having with City Council in Milton about the need for a more robust or an ordinance related to public camping because of state law requiring that the city be able to remove people because they can get sued by members of the business community or homeowners if you don't do enough to thwart this. And she's basically saying, look, we just don't have anything right now.
The goal of this is hopefully that we would never have to utilize an enforcement element. But there is a tricky spot as an officer. We have members of our community calling us and saying, hey, I'm having to step over somebody in order to get into my business. What can we do about it? On private property, they have the option of a trespass.
Yeah, I mean, if it's on your property, it's a trespass. But if it's in the sidewalk outside your property, you can't trespass somebody from there. And what she's saying is, we don't have recourse. We don't have the ordinance to do what needs to be done there. And by the way, not just in, you might think of the fairly common situation, like somebody's camping like in the forest, which is very common because it's out of sight, it's relatively secure, there's a little bit of shelter from the elements, you can string up a tent or a lean-to or a tarp and have a campfire. I mean, there's, you know, lots of things about why people camp, because where else will they go, right? You know, it's hard to do that. But it's in unusual places, too. I had never heard this before.
We have, as police officers, responded to cemeteries where folks have put up tents over grave sites and had to ask the individuals to leave. They have brought 4, 5, 6 suitcases with them. They bring large amounts of food, tents, and some other elements.
What? people are camping in graveyards? I'd not heard that before. Now, in making the ordinance, she says, of course, we need to allow for emergencies. We need to allow for, you know, there's certain exceptions and, obviously private property. But still, we need to be able to do something about all of this. And she says, even spaces that, you know, again, you can use temporarily, but the problem is that people are using them on a long-term basis, which makes it a problem for everybody else because you don't own that. You're not entitled to that. The park bench, the gazebo in one case she mentions.
So again, I want to be very clear. This is to help make sure that these shared spaces remain safe, but also available to all. We've had incidents where folks have gone to utilize the gazebo during the day, but it's not available because someone has set out a sleeping bag and all of their property across all of the different the seating options. It's difficult to currently remove someone from that property based on the lack of an ordinance.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting. Somebody's going to say this is an unfair or wrong-headed analogy, but in some ways it's like the abandoned vessel problem. You know, how long do you have to wait before you can force somebody to move their boat or before you can, you know, I mean, tow their boat or seize it or something like that? Well, it's a very difficult thing to enforce, you know. Were they there overnight? How long were they there? Same thing with public camping is this person is obviously occupying this public use facility longer than they should and inconveniencing other people. But at what point? Because, you know, the old problem is like if somebody is sleeping day after day under a tree, problem. But if somebody goes and is, you know, takes a nap under a tree, normal, you know. What's the difference between napping and camping? Hard to say. Not so easy to specify.
There are some opportunities. We have worked with private business owners and private property owners to offer that they can have a standing trespass that would allow law enforcement in the event they find individuals there and they do not want them there to go ahead and make a standing trespass to relocate those individuals.
Right, because typically you have to specifically say, remove this person from my property. It's, you know, then you warn them, and if they come back, then you can actually deal with prosecution. You know, being on somebody else's property in and of itself is typically not a criminal thing. It's only when they have told you to get out. But if they have a standing trespass, at least you have the ability to remove them. And then if you tell them, then they go back again, you can actually prosecute. But and look, it's hard because some of the areas that she's dealing with are like right next to the county boundary, and the Milton police only have authority within the city boundaries unless specifically granted some kind of a co-enforcement, you know, interagency agreement, interlocal agreement with the county.
Some of the areas that you're speaking of in particular, it's unique because there's county ownership, there's private property ownership, and there's some city ownership. And so we are working with them together. One of those areas in particular is underneath the bridge over by Taco Bell. Mm-hmm. County owns one side, city owns the other side. We were poised to move some folks from that direction, but we didn't want to just put them onto the county side because that's not going to solve the problem, right? We need to make sure that these folks have resources, they have a proper place to go. How do we combine together? So we are already in conversation with the county regarding getting trespasses for those locations and finding the appropriate place that individuals can receive resources that are more reasonable for a living accommodation than what they're getting.
Yeah, and ultimately, that's the goal. I mean, the goal is not just removal or punishment or something like that. The goal is let's get everybody into a situation that is safe and good for them in a long-term way. But some areas are hard because of that boundary and working on that with the county. I talked to Sheriff Johnson about this on Monday, and he said he had not yet engaged in any conversation with Chief Frank. I'm assuming she was talking to people at the county to, you know, work with their ordinances or to have the ability to enforce things outside of the specific city boundary of Milton.
Be aware that Pensacola has already issued this almost identical ordinance with a few minor changes just because they're a larger organization, Okaloosa, Escambia County. And so as these other groups are starting to make those transitions and moves, if we have an open door and do not have a similar ordinance, there is a potential risk that if folks are shifted from one location to another and we do not have some form of protection for the city, we could become a local area that folks come to because there aren't the same restrictions here. So just be aware those other areas have already passed this legislation.
And that's true. I mean, if you have Escambia, Santa Rosa, Okaloosa, Pensacola, and, Gulf Breeze have already got these ordinances on the books, people will find a way to go to the place where they can't be removed. And we don't want to have Milton become that place. They're having some incidents already, but we don't want it to be major incidents. So this should be a fairly straightforward thing to pass the ordinance. City Council, I'm sure, will take it up, do what's right. It will be no drama involved. Okay, so anyway, we'll see. No, it's still Milton. And Chief is doing a great job. She really is. She's been on the job, I think, about a year and a half, something like that. Anyway, great accomplishment bringing her. She's fantastic. Had a chance to meet her a couple times in person, and, she's great. 437-1620, 437-1620. Oh, somebody had sent me, I had not heard about this, that in the Philippines, there's out of Manila, there's the North Cemetery, which they say has a lot of homeless camping in the cemetery. I just looked it up real quick, and, I haven't had much chance to research this, but the initial information is that, like, The Guardian did a story a couple years ago on this. It's 133 acres, and there's, like, 6,000 people living there in the cemetery. 800 families, as well as, like, a million dead people because, that's a cemetery. But, oh, my God.
That's a city.
Yeah. I mean, that's a city the size of Milton or Gulf Breeze, 5,000, 6,000 people. Okay, wow. Okay, horrible. But, again, where will they live is always the question. 723 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
The average checking account pays less than a tenth of a percent. Pennair Credit Union's high-yield checking, 5.05% APY. That's more than most savings accounts and 70 times more than any old checking account. Make every deposit count. Learn more at pennair.org/checking.
Federally insured by NCUA, Pennair's high-yield checking account pays up to 5.05% annual percentage yield on balances up to $10,000 with e-statements and a monthly ACH deposit of $250 or more.
Here's today's Strength for Life.
Consider with me the topic of ego.
Proverbs 16 explains that an unchecked, insufferable ego will lead to destruction and to a fall. Ego is your enemy. It's your enemy because it inhibits you from learning. You can't teach someone something that they think they already know. Also, ego is your enemy because it destroys relationships. Eventually, other people tire of you if you're self-absorbed and egotistical. Further, ego is your enemy because it's antithetical to the gospel. After all, it's for by grace we're saved through faith, and that not of ourselves, it is a gift of God. And the cure to ego is to have a God confidence. It's okay to be confident in the gifts that God has entrusted to you. To avoid being egotistical, you must never forget that God gave you those gifts. So be confident in Him and then avoid the destruction that comes from an insufferable ego.
For more Strength for Life, check out our website at strengthforlife.church.
Managing your ECUA service is easier. The new My ECUA mobile app puts everything you need right at your fingertips. From paying your bill, submitting service requests, and reporting issues like missed collections, damaged or lost bins, water main breaks, and sewer overflows, it's all right there in one easy-to-use app. Take control of your services anytime, anywhere. So download My ECUA. It's available in the App Store and Google Play.
Experience, training, and commitment matter. I'm Linda Sanborn, and I'm running for Santa Rosa County School Board District 1. I dedicated 35 years to teaching in public schools and earned a master's degree in education. I know what it takes for students to succeed. With grandchildren in local schools, I'm committed to providing the best education for all students. I would appreciate your vote for Linda Sanborn.
Paid for and approved by Linda Sanborn, Santa Rosa School Board District 1.
You're not looking for an argument.
You just want to know what's going on.
And that's a good thing.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Your ship is filthy.
Oh, she has no idea. If I had a black light, the place would look like a Jackson Pollock painting.
I was lying on the grass on Sunday morning of last week.
What does Star-Lord mean by that? 726 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. PJ has traffic on the fives.
There is a brand new vehicle crash in Roblox, Davis Highway, and Berg Street in Pensacola. Just use caution for that area. Also still working that vehicle crash, County Road 187 at Ward Basin Road in Milton. No roadblock there. Finally, it appears that US 90 is still at a standstill, Simpson River to 5th Avenue and Pace, and that is causing some serious backups on Woodbine Road. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Oh, that'll get better.
Let's hope.
We don't really know why, but it's not good for sure. Drive around if you can. 727 News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Evacuated Spokane, Washington residents are returning home to find the charred remains of houses burned in the Old Trails fire. Residents began being able to go home yesterday. Find a lot of houses charred down to the chimneys. Many residents say they do plan to rebuild. The fire destroyed 700 structures, including hundreds of homes, since it was started over the weekend. Todd Blanche's nomination to be the next U.S. Attorney General is moving forward. The Senate Judiciary Committee voting 12 to 10 along party lines to advance the nomination. That sets up a final vote in the upper chamber to be held in the coming days. And the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee will vote whether to hold Dr. Anthony Fauci in contempt on Thursday. That vote comes after he invoked the Fifth Amendment, 100-some-odd times during his hearing last week about the COVID-19 pandemic.
You know, the irony about this whole story is that the critics of Fauci have frequently said that he has immunity because of the Biden pardon. He doesn't need to invoke the Fifth Amendment. The people who have defended at least his right under the Constitution to invoke the Fifth Amendment has said that the Biden pardon does not cover forward things past 2025. And so the irony here is that if they charge him with contempt of Congress, they will have proved that he and his supporters were right, that he is not immune to all prosecution, and therefore raising the Fifth Amendment is actually a meaningful thing for him to do. So a little bit of a catch-22 there. David, thanks so much for the update. We got a little bit more information. Channel 3 did good reporting following up on the pilot who landed on I-10, Emily Shelton, 21 years young. 21 years with 1,300 flight hours. And it was a first time for the person who was with her, the, you know, flight training student. So you've seen it all now at this point. But wow, that's even more. I mean, and she was so composed, you know, 21 years old. And, you know, I'm sure that in situations like that, not everybody is quite as cool a customer. Oh, one thing, you know, I did do a little bit of research on this. I didn't mention it yesterday, but my first comment about this was that's why they built the interstates to handle airplanes, which is what I had always believed. I went and looked it up online at the Federal Highway Administration, a part of USDOT. They actually have a myths page. The interstates were not built to handle planes. It's a myth. Persistent myth. Not true. Other myths related to the highway system, Eisenhower did not make it. It was long predated him, goes back to 1939. I mean, he was part of it, but he didn't conceive it in his head. Another myth, it was not built for moving tanks. I've said this, I think, on the air, that it was meant for defense of the country in times of war if we get invaded. It's a facilitating a system to, like, he, you know, looked at what the Germans had and thought we need to do something like that, like it's the Autobahn. No, it's primarily for moving, you know, people and freight. Also, what was the other one? Evacuating cities for an atomic bomb? No, wasn't meant for that. Beltways are not to bypass downtown traffic. They're just to more efficiently facilitate movement. Also, the numbering system, if you don't know, this is actually true. This is just something people ask sometimes. East-west are even numbers, 10, 20, 80. Goes north, you know, 10s to 90s. It's the reverse of the U.S. highway system, which goes north to south in increasing number. Same thing east for north-south roads. Odd numbers like highway, U.S. Interstate 5, Interstate 95. Same thing east coast, west coast, numbering.
I'm C.J. Papa, waiting for an official decision in the Democratic Senate primary race in Michigan. Far-left candidate Abdul El-Sayed holds a slim lead over establishment candidate Haley Stevens. But this morning, El-Sayed posting on X, "We won. I am so proud to be your Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate. Let's win in November." Republican candidate Mike Rogers.
Two broken candidates here. I mean, one wants to allow the Communist Party to buy farmland here, and the other one believes that, you know, that America deserved 9/11. They had two terrible choices.
Rogers on Fox and Friends. North Carolina's 11th congressional district will have a new representative come January. Congressman Chuck Edwards decides to drop his re-election bid after a House ethics panel found substantial evidence the Republican made unwanted advances toward two female staffers. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 7:31 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 79 degrees with mostly cloudy skies. We'll get a look at our forecast here in just a few minutes. Four juveniles were injured overnight after a gunshot ricocheted. This happened at the Pensacola Village Apartments. PPD says officers were called to Sacred Heart Hospital last night for a juvenile with a gunshot wound, then learned that three others had also been hit by fragments from that same bullet while standing nearby. All of the injuries were described as being minor. No arrests have been made. Police do say more information will be released as it becomes available. A 22-year-old registered sex offender living in Pensacola is now facing new charges tied to child exploitation. FDLE says Sebastian Belensky was already arrested earlier this year on a probation violation after cocaine was found in his home. Investigators say further digging revealed he used unreported Snapchat accounts to solicit minors and send explicit content. Belensky remains in the Holmes County Jail. That's where his original probation sentence had originated. A judge in Tallahassee says the ballot language on Florida's property tax amendment is misleading. It's going to have to be rewritten before the November election. Judge David Frank ruling that the title reads more like a political slogan than neutral language, and ordered Attorney General James Uthmeyer to submit a revised version within 10 days. That amendment itself will remain on the ballot. One Energy Place has a lot going for it under its new local ownership. Southland Commercial Managing Director Michael Caro tells News Radio one of the opportunities in particular deserves its own spotlight.
This used to be the home of the old Normas. So a lot of folks who've been around Pensacola for a long time have dined there, have seen the amazing water views. And so if we can find a restaurant operator that wants to come in, please have them give me a call.
Caro does say One Energy Place sold on July 31st to a group of local investors. transitioning that iconic 250,000 square foot building from FPL's single tenant headquarters to a multi-tenant Class A office property. FPL will stay on as one of the tenants. The building already has 127,000 square feet leased, with another 100,000 currently being negotiated. Now, the University of West Florida landing a big grant from the National Science Foundation, $1.74 million, to train students in cybersecurity and AI. UWF is one of only 14 universities nationwide to be chosen for this new Cyber AI Scholarship for Service program, and that funding will cover scholarships, stipends, and career development for 16 students to prepare them for careers protecting federal systems and critical infrastructure. Residents in the Cantonment and Farm Hill area get a chance to clear out their old junk this week. Escambia County holding the free neighborhood cleanup for old furniture, appliances, household waste. Items need to be to the curb by 7 o'clock on the trash morning. Only residents in the designated area can take part. Anything left outside the zone will not be picked up. Residents can call the county's community redevelopment agency with any questions. And it is 7:35 here at News Radio. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with PJ.
Thanks, David. There is a vehicle crash and roadblock Pine Forest Road at West 9 Mile. Also, a vehicle crash and roadblock Davis Highway at Berg Street in Pensacola. Use caution through those areas. Also, have a vehicle crash County Road 187, Ward Basin Road in Milton. No roadblock associated with that. And then finally, it appears that US 90 is at a standstill, Simpson River to Chemukla Highway now in Pace. That is causing some major backups on Woodbine Road all the way to River Hill Drive. Apparently, there is a disabled vehicle on the roadway that is causing those backups. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
We do have a small 20% chance of rain today. Otherwise, mostly sunny skies, high near 90 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping are 77. Keeping our beautiful summertime pattern continuing into Thursday, 20% chance of rain, high near 89. Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 77. Going into Friday, 20% chance of rain, high near 89. And Friday night, temperatures dropping near 78. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Right now, 77 degrees with partly cloudy skies. Our next news in 30 minutes and breaking news anytime. News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Nicole Murray with your money now. Uber's earnings were in line with estimates, but the company's guidance for the third quarter trailed expectations. The company said bookings in the third quarter will be $59.25 billion at the midpoint of the range, trailing the average FactSet estimate of roughly $59.3 billion. Uber's earnings forecast also missed estimates. Advanced Micro Devices reported second quarter earnings. The chipmaker beat expectations on the top and bottom lines and provided inline guidance for the current quarter. AMD makes both data center CPUs and GPUs. Both kinds of AI chips are driving the company's growth, and the unit sales doubled on a year-over-year basis. Oil prices have risen this morning after Yemen's Iran-backed Houthis claimed responsibility for a Saudi tanker strike. West Texas Intermediate up to $76 a barrel, Brent at $80. Futures are higher this morning after a record-setting day on Wall Street yesterday. On Tuesday, the Dow gained 907, the NASDAQ up 671. That's your money now.
Hello, I'm Colonel Eric W. Shorter, and I'm running for mayor. I'm a true son of Pensacola and a product of multiple generations of public servants. My goals are simple. Vertical economic initiatives, jobs, 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 affordability and housing, neighborhood revitalization, and education reformation. Citywide opportunity is possible, and I'm not guessing. Vote for the positive choice. Colonel Eric W. Shorter for mayor of Pensacola.
Paid and approved by Colonel Eric Shorter, candidate for mayor of Pensacola.
Each Sunday at 7:30 a.m., the Bible Baptist Bookstore of Pensacola, Florida, brings you Theological Seminar with teacher Peter S. Ruckman, founder and president of the Pensacola Bible Institute. He will teach you what the Bible says about the subject, not merely what it is presumed to teach.
Tune in this Sunday at 7:30 a.m. for Theological Seminar with Dr. Peter S. Ruckman, brought to you by Bible Baptist Bookstore on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
You're still glowing, flirting, grooving. You've still got it. But your immune system weakens as you age, making it harder to fight illnesses like pneumococcal pneumonia and RSV. Vaccines are a key part of any health routine, and can help protect you from getting really sick. Ask your doctor or pharmacist which vaccines you need. See more at PfizerForAll.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Hi, this is Mike Kohler, your District 2 Commissioner seeking re-election. As a retired Navy captain with 33 years of naval service, I'll continue fighting to preserve our communities, manage taxpayer dollars responsibly, and oppose wasteful spending. As your commissioner, you can continue to count on me to be a strong advocate for public safety. I respectfully request your vote. Please vote Mike Kohler on August 18th.
Paid for and approved political ad by Mike Kohler for County Commissioner, Republican District 2.
No opinions, no arguing, just the news, right now.
Right now.
Chris Bryant, News Radio 92.3.
I'm Austin Price for News Radio 92.3.
Every few minutes, you get the latest local news, traffic on the fives, weather, and updates you actually need. So whether you're in the car for 5 minutes or 50, you're always caught up. Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin. Weekdays 4 to 7.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us now by phone, we have Pensacola Mayor D.C. Reeves. I want to remind you that this interview is brought to you by Lambert Transfer and Storage. Choose the team with a legacy, Lambert Moving Systems. Visit GoLambertTeam.com. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the show, sir. Good to have you.
Thank you so much, Andrew. Good morning.
So we have a lot of things going on in the city. The one that I definitely want to give you a chance to talk about a little bit is another fire at the scrapyard. Are you kidding?
Yeah, I think I had the same reaction. While we're in the conversations of trying to kind of rectify things and make sure that, I mean, when you just see how far our hose has to go to get to a hydrant to put out this fire, I mean, if you see the video of it, it's insane. And so, this is just that classic case of kind of being in that industry where you do what you want to do and you don't really have to care much about your neighbors. Well, when you start having 6 fires in 2 years, then we're going to force you to care about your neighbors is really where we're at. So in fairness, after fire number 5, the company, the organization has been very receptive to our concerns. I will say that. I haven't even had that direct conversation with them other than letters that I've sent to England and everywhere else to share our displeasure. So I know there had been some conversations with our fire department. On-site inspections, things like that. So obviously disappointing to see this was much more minor in nature from the previous one. And that could be, we'll see, could be perhaps because of some of the kind of quick strike adjustments that were made that will help mitigate some of these issues. So more to come on that. But the frustration that you share in your question is the same one we share in the building right now, because this has just gotten to a ridiculous level that if you aren't going to be a good neighbor, we're going to make you be a good neighbor.
Right. I was stunned by it. One of the things that's on the agenda for next week is I think the curfew, or at least the broad, is this the final ordinance we've got? I have not had a chance to read it, so if it is, I apologize. And what elements are relating to the parents and parental responsibility is the particular thing that I'm curious about.
Exactly. So, yeah, it is on. Obviously, like any ordinance in the city, is 2 readings. So this would be the first reading. Second would be in September. But ultimately, it follows the same state statute that cities are required to codify to enforce, which is 11 p.m. For and it's 17 and under, 11 p.m. on weeknights, midnight on weekends. And before you say, wait a second, my son or daughter work at a restaurant or something like that. Obviously, there are several, like, I don't have time to go through them all on the radio, but there are several exceptions like that. Commuting, you know, coming to and from, being at a friend's house. You know, it's not like they're going to come if you're in a friend's front yard on private property. I mean, there's definitely different scenarios like that. And so I would read through those. But ultimately, 11 on the weekdays, midnight on the weekends. And first is a warning, second is a fine, third is a bigger fine and potential additional action. So, and for the parents, there are fines up to $500 depending on how many warnings have taken place. So same thing, you can kind of look through kind of strike one, strike two, strike three. But the bottom line is, if we have a serial problem with your child being out after midnight, causing issues on public property, then this is not a child problem solely. This is a parental problem as well. And that's what really needs to be addressed. There's like the old 80s, you know, what is it? It's 10 o'clock or it's midnight. Where is your child
you
right
know
now?
Where your children are,
like,
yeah.
I mean, that like the old PSA. So I don't think this is an unreasonable ask. And I would say, generally speaking, we've had a lot of warm reception to this around the city when this has been discussed.
Is it citywide or is it zoned by downtown
it
only or something?
It's
citywide. Okay. Was that
on
legal advice?
That before, and the press conference, they'd asked me that. And I know that was our intent because you start picking and choosing streets and districts and all those, you know, or if Andrew's on one side of the street, is he not in the curfew? And then the other side he is. You know, I think it's just easier that's a legal decision ultimately, but purely from a legal standpoint, obviously there's going to be certain areas where you're going to see this more likely to happen or for violations to happen. Nonetheless, it would be citywide.
All right, very good. The LDC, I was just browsing the agenda while we were talking. The LDC final implementation, I think that's on the council for next week.
Yeah, finally, the snowball is big enough for us to take something on. This is a multiple-year process of auditing our land development code. And if you guys haven't heard, we have not overhauled our land development code holistically since 1949. So you'd say, well, you know, hey, that sounds like a boring topic. What does that have to do with me? If you talk about housing affordability, then you should be talking about the land development code, because this is what allows us to be able to thicken neighborhoods, to be able to modernize our rules that maybe make a garage apartment a little easier to build. Maybe all of those little things where we can increase inventory and units. So from a mayor's desk, there are very few paintbrushes that can paint with one stroke to be able to attack affordability. And that's why we did this right when I got in office. And again, 3 years later, almost, we're going to finally be adopting some of those changes.
We'll look at some of that in just a second. We're talking to Mayor D.C. Reeves. We've got PJ with Traffic on the Fives.
Still working that vehicle crash to the roadblock Pine Forest Road at West 9 Mile. Use caution through that area. Also have a vehicle crash in roadblock Davis Highway at Burke Street in Pensacola. There also appears to be a disabled vehicle on the roadway, U.S. 90 at the Simpson River. U.S. 90 is backed up to Stevens Road and Pace, and that's also causing backups on Woodbine. I'm PJ with your Traffic on the Fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. Back to Mayor D.C. Reeves. So for people who are probably not going to sit down and read through the entire proposed revised land development code, and it is important for people to understand that the things that annoy you in your daily life when you live in the city, like your neighbor's fence, your neighbor's tree, how far or near you are to the sidewalk. I mean, like all of that stuff is land development code stuff. You're annoyed that the coffee shop is too loud. Like that's all LDC stuff. And so it matters, and it's all every rule is a result of a case. So what are some of the big changes?
Yeah, I will reinforce that point by saying I think public works, like all the stuff, street sweeping and cleaning out storm ponds and all that, that combined with LDC or the zoning are those types of things that you don't notice as a resident have such an impact on you. It's just something you don't think about.
Right.
But you're absolutely right. Our land development code is how big your front yard needs to be, how close your house can be to the next house. All of those different things are set and codified in a land development code that set those rules. And that's why building a house in the city is going to have a different set of rules than building a house in Escambia County or Santa Rosa County or Milton or anywhere else. And so I would say probably the biggest change is, and this is a recurring theme, I think, in this administration, which is clarity. We had different sections of our code that said one thing, but then when we amended something in 1986, we added something else that actually conflicted with the other page.
Okay.
I mean, it's the Band-Aid after Band-Aid after Band-Aid. And the reason we haven't done a holistic change of your land development code since 1949 is because it's hard to do. It takes 3 years. You got to audit. You got to have all these public meetings. I mean, it takes some political will to say, hey, we can do better. We had several different overlay districts with different sets of rules in our downtown. Actually, even had some areas that were in two. So what rules am I following? Am I following that overlay or am I following this overlay? So there was lots. I would say eliminating confusion for our contractors, our builders, our citizens who want to build or renovate their homes in our city. I think this is the clearest the rules will have ever been, ever in the history of the city. So I think that is important and encourages more growth and more development and making people more confident to build their houses.
It also means that if you're ever going to tweak it, if you're ever going to change it, you know where to change it, you know what needs to be changed, and you can actually make the change accomplish the outcome you're aiming at, right?
Yeah, exactly. And obviously there are several changes we can talk about. You know, another big one that makes headlines sometimes, the initially strengthened tree ordinance that will go from $400 to $1,500 and many other things will be in here.
Okay.
Councilman Moore and I are going a step further to protect Southern live oaks specifically that are going to have a significant application fee, significant higher fine fees and things like that, that we are not going to infringe upon private property rights. If your property allows you to build 3,000 square feet, you can build 3,000 square feet. However, we're going to make you think about maybe putting a driveway on the other side or something like that, because it's going to be costly if you're going to take down a 150-year-old oak tree. I mean, that's just the fact. So anyway, it addresses trees. It addresses thickening neighborhoods, what you can or can't do with duplexes on certain lots. So it gets real technical, you know, for the radio. But I could just tell you there's going to be a lot less confusion, a lot more clarity about what our rules are, and some opportunity to make it easier on our citizens to do what they want to do.
I want to ask a super nerd question that I know you'll appreciate, and I just don't know the answer to this. It has always struck me that the linear measurement for trees was not a great way to do things because, for example, if you're replacing a 36-inch tree with 12 3-inch trees, that's not the same because it's a radius squared math problem to replace. It seems like it ought to be that same kind of a relationship. Which way does the new LDC go on replacement trees?
Yeah, actually, this was something that I put in that I agree with you. That if you had a 36-inch tree, our current rule right now is you have to do 12, only 3-inch trees is what you're allowed. So you have to do 12 3-inch trees. Well, that's not going to create canopy on your sidewalk out front. You're going to go stuff them in your backyard. I mean, that doesn't even really make any sense. So what we did is I got with our arborist and we said, well, why wouldn't we allow citizens to put as large a tree to count against that 36-inch as reasonable? So we actually went from 3 to 6 inches. So now, same scenario, someone could do 12 threes or they could do 6 sixes. We aren't letting them go larger than 6 because of its ability to plant. You know, we don't want somebody to drag a dead old tree that's 24 inches wide and say, wait, I replanted it. Yeah, I'm good. So on the expertise of our arborist, we said you can't really go larger than 6 with a new planting. But I can tell you, if you do a 6-inch tree, to your point, Andrew, the canopy is created 5 years sooner than a 3-inch tree.
Well,
it's more than 5 years sooner. So.
No, I love that portion of it. I meant that it should be more than just 6 of them, because when you get into the squared relationship, the surface area of the cross section that you're replacing, which is of course very much related to the overall canopy size, it's not enough to say, you know, just 6 of them. I haven't done the math in my head, but you'd probably need to be, you know, 12 or
you're
20 of them.
What's that? You're saying, hey, is inference enough? And that's a fair argument. Obviously, that's a pretty standard thing. That's what they do in Tallahassee and many other cities around Florida. And then, and you pay a fine if you don't make up those inches. $500 a caliper inch is what it'll be now. So so totally get that, but we got to balance, you know, what would the right number be. And
okay, and obviously trees will grow, so I mean, and you know, it's that squared relationship is going to change over time as the trees get bigger. I get that too. I was just curious. I didn't know the answer, so I was curious about that. There's an informational meeting about Baptist tomorrow night, I think.
Yeah, that's right. We actually been having them every month. Every other month is at Lakeview Center, at the gymnasium right there by Lakeview, just north of the Baptist, the Legacy campus. And then they're the corresponding month, the next month, they're actually doing on-site. If you want to go, we won't let you go in there and get a sledgehammer or anything, but you can get pretty close and you can walk around with our Jacobs Engineering folks and our city folks. So it gives you a real opportunity if you want to, you know, take the ground and see what's going on. So we've been doing that now for several months. So yeah, absolutely. We'd love to have people out that are interested and, or, you know, have any concerns about what's going on.
311 app. Somebody said it's not working anymore. I know nothing about this except what somebody told me.
Okay. We did go to Penny
going to the AI on the call in, right?
That's right. So if you go to citypensacola.com right now, on your phone, on your laptop, whatever you want to do. If you go to citypensacola.com right now, you can basically, the 311 app is on the front page right now.
Okay, so instead of on your phone, it's on the web page, basically.
Yeah, now I'm not saying that with finality. I obviously need to learn more about, you know, what app they're talking about and download the right one. I don't know if I can solve the entire thing other than to say anybody out there that's got an issue with the city of pothole, garbage, anything else, you can go right to the front page of the website, and that we've got that prompt right there that can help you file a ticket and get it done quickly.
Very good. We always like to end with lightning round questions. First one for you, is there any movie that growing up, whether it scared you or otherwise inspired you, that affected your behavior? Any movie that you drew a behavior change from?
Oh, my God. This is supposed to be like questions I can answer in 3 seconds. I'm waxed philosophical on my, you know, I answer Dumb and Dumber every time, and I just feel like it always fits. It always applies.
That's how you outfitted your van, was in exterior carpeting. Okay, fair enough. I got
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's why I wear orange tuxedos.
There you go. During recess, what was your game of choice? Or activity of choice?
All sorts of sports, but basketball. I played basketball through high school. That, definitely basketball.
Okay, and continuing a theme, did your family play card games or any kind of game growing up? If so, what was the card game of default choice?
Yeah, so my grandfather and I, he's awarded 2 Purple Hearts in World War II. Always, he would pick me up when my mom was at work after school, and we played gin rummy all the time. And he was relentless. He would not let me, you know, there was no helping me win. There was no, so my record was like 2 and 900 probably. But I learned how to play well, at least.
How much of your birthday card money did Grandpa win back?
Well, he would give me $2 bills every March 25th.
Gotcha, yeah.
So he didn't take any money off me. He wasn't that tough. He didn't want me to learn that kind of lesson.
Oh, you had it easy.
Yeah. That's right, exactly. I get to keep all my cash. Yeah.
DC Reeves, Mayor of Pensacola, looking forward to the meeting next week, City Council meeting next week. Thanks, as always, for the time. We'll talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. PJ's got traffic on the fives.
Still dealing with that disabled vehicle on the roadway, US 90 at the Simpson River. US 90 is backed up to Stevens Road and Pace, and that also has Woodbine backed up to Guernsey. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
You know, I always talk about doing projects with Pensacola Hardware, that they're a great source of both advice and of supplies, and especially if you build things for a living, they're fabulous. They're there for you. I don't always talk as much about the retail operation, the front of the house, like the front, I don't know, quarter or so of Pensacola Hardware is all kinds of housewares and gumbo pots and knives and cast iron skillets and cookware and, you know, grills and Yeti merchandise and SEC merchandise. And, like, I mean, it is like its own little great mall selection there. And you can buy gifts for somebody else. You can buy gifts for that person in your life that's you. You know, sometimes treat yourself. But it really is. There's all kinds of stuff there. And you should go browse. And it's always, you know, best quality, good quality, great. Again, gifts for you or for somebody else. Pensacola Hardware, the oldest business in Florida, helping people build, rebuild, and remodel Pensacola since 1851, right downtown at 20 East Gregory Street.
Need to move across town, across country, or even across the globe? Trust Lambert Moving Systems, veteran-owned, military-approved, and now celebrating over 100 years of moving excellence. As a quality award winner, BBB accredited, and agent for North American Van Lines, they handle local, long-distance, industrial, and international moves with packing, storage, and warehousing available. Serving Pensacola to Mobile and all surrounding areas, and supporting the Gary Sinise Foundation. Choose the team with a legacy. Lambert Moving Systems. Go LambertTeam.com.
As she stared at me through the window, I realized the time we spent in the backyard on her trailer just wasn't fulfilling. We used to have so much fun on the water. I just couldn't crank her up.
But Key Marine did. Fun days on the bay are back. Woo! And my Yamaha outboard runs better than ever.
Key Marine gets the work done and lets you handle the fun. Key Marine, your Yamaha outboard dealer on Bower Road in Pensacola. Google Key Marine or find them on Facebook.
Hi, this is DC Reeves. Together, we are moving Pensacola in the right direction. My priorities are building a healthy economy with good careers and keeping our community safe. I will always support our small businesses and back the blue. Let's keep working as a team to move Pensacola forward. I'm DC Reeves, and I'd be honored to have your vote on August 18th.
DC Reeves is endorsed by Sheriff Chip Simmons and the Fraternal Order of Police. Paid for by DC Reeves for Mayor.
The I-10 Wired TechNet CyberCoast Summit returns October 28th to Pensacola Beach. This is the Southeast's premier cybersecurity and technology conference. Get connected with top experts and explore the cutting-edge trends shaping our future. From AI to robotics to national security and healthcare tech. Discounts available for students, military, and government employees. Don't miss out. Secure your tickets today at itenwired.com.
4 years ago, Kerry Smith made three promises: roads before development, fair impact fees, and rewriting our land development code. He's kept every single one. Kerry steered $60 million in roadway capacity projects, breaking ground this summer. Kerry alone championed impact fees so new growth pays its fair share. Rewrote the land development code twice to protect our neighborhoods from flooding. Kerry continues to work with FDOT to four-lane Highway 90 through downtown Milton. Promises made, promises kept. Political advertisement paid for and approved by Kerry Smith, Republican for Santa Rosa County Commissioner, District 2.
All right, 7:59 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with a headline or two for us. David?
Well, President Trump is now in Las Vegas after speaking at a Republican committee event in California Tuesday. His trip came after it was reported a man was arrested that appeared to be monitoring security. That person was reportedly carrying a loaded weapon.
All right, thanks so much. Tall Ship Alyssa is coming. We're going to talk to one of the key people about
Local
it.
Talk in the Morning, 5 to 9 with Andrew McKay is on News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.
A progressive declares victory in Michigan. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. Abdul El-Sayed, who's backed by socialists, posted on X this morning that he won the Democratic Senate primary, though votes are still being counted as he leads Congresswoman Haley Stevens by about 1%.
We have a responsibility to assure that we unite to make sure that Mike Rogers never sees the inside of the U.S. Senate.
Mike Rogers is the Republican hoping to flip that Michigan Senate seat, now held by a retiring Democrat. And Rogers tells Fox,
the DSA candidates in the state in two different congressional races look like they're pulling it off as well. The Democrat Party is lost to this hardcore socialist attitude.
The two candidates he's referring to are Donovan McKinney and William Lawrence. McKinney, supported by socialists, leads a House.